Series called Stories of Transformation. And what we are doing each week is we're looking at a story from the Bible of someone's encounter with Jesus and the difference that made to their life. And then we're hearing a story from someone today who had not exactly the same sort of encounter, but an encounter along similar-ish sort of lines that enabled them to discover Jesus being real for themselves also. And this morning we're going to read from certainly what must be one of the best known stories in the Bible. If you've got a Bible with you, or an iPhone or equivalent with you, it's Luke chapter 19 and verses 1 to 10. And Luke's Gospel writes this for us. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. And a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he couldn't because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. And when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." The town where that story was set, town of Jericho, it's a pretty insignificant town today, but in Jesus' time, it was really quite an important place. It's certainly one of the oldest cities that archaeologists have found. My light's just gone, it's back again. And was a pretty important city for three reasons I want to give you, just as the background to this story. The first is it was pretty important because of its situation, where it lay. Here's Israel in the time of Jesus, and there were only basically three major roads that went through it. There was this one that ran down the coast across the plain of Galilee and went up and then down to the ancient civilizations that were called Mesopotamia. That was the way of the sea. So this one went down to Egypt, down this way, and then here across to the places that were known variously as Assyria and Babylon and so on in Old Testament times. And there was this one that came down the east side of the River Jordan, that went straight down to the Gulf of Aqaba and all the trading ships. And there was only one major road that linked those two roads across Israel. And it was this one that ran across. So a pretty important trade route, because if you got anything that was coming up from the Gulf of Aqaba to go down to Egypt, it had to come up here, cross that road and down here, because all down there was desert. Let's get back to where I was. There. Now, Jericho, you see my little dot was about there. No, sorry, there, just that side of the Jordan. I haven't got a steady hand today. Jericho was placed just over the Jordan as you came in to the Promised Land. And because it was there, and because it was on these trade routes, what that meant was that lots of trade passed through your city. And what did trade mean? Trade meant money. Especially if you were a tax collector, like this guy Zacchaeus was. Now, in Bible times, you actually bought the right to tax a region. And that's what Zacchaeus had done. The Romans couldn't be bothered going around, you know, coming to everybody and saying, "Give us your taxes, give us your taxes." So all they did was they sold it off to the best bidder. So let's say Chris here had made a bid, "Okay, I'll give you $100 million to buy the right to tax this end of Vancouver." And Rome says, "Yeah, that sounds good to us." What we'll do is we'll give you a few soldiers now, Chris, and you can go and collect the taxes door to door. It will save us the trouble. And if anybody gets difficult, just use the soldiers behind you. So a tax collector was really hated in New Testament times. One, because he was seen as a collaborator, a conspirator with these invading people, Rome. But even worse, because they just defrauded you. You know, if the real tax should have been the equivalent of, say, $10, they would have made it $20. And you couldn't argue why, because you got the Roman soldiers behind you. So little wonder this guy is described in this story in verse 2 as a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and he was wealthy. There was tons of money to be made from being in Jericho. And I can imagine that Zacchaeus day after day would be sitting there thinking, thank goodness I got Jericho. What a great place to be. What a situation to be in for a tax collector. Money galore as all these traders passed through on the trade route and he could tax what he liked. He'd made a packet. Same thing about Jericho was its climate. It was a particularly pleasant climate. Now, if you look at this here, you can see here's the by the coast, there's the Mediterranean. You can see plain, then the central lowlands start to climb. Then you can see how high it gets here. So here's Jerusalem pretty much at the top, and then it dropped down steeply to the plain that was just alongside the river Jericho there. The river Jordan was about 300 meters below sea level. It's one of the lowest places on earth. So it had a much more pleasant climate than Jerusalem, the capital. And that's why King Herod had built himself a palace down there, a winter palace that he could go down to when it got pretty cold, because Jerusalem was about 800 meters above sea level. So that's about two-thirds of the way up Grouse Mountain, up to the tip of Grouse. So you can imagine in winter it got pretty cold. And so Herod decided what he needed was every time winter came was to move the entire royal court down to a new palace in Jericho where the climate was much better. And of course, where the palace moved to, all the important people moved to and all those who thought they were important. So they all moved down to Jericho en masse. And what did moving down to Jericho en masse mean? What it meant was that business increased. And what did business mean? Business meant money, and money meant taxes. This was a great place to be a chief tax collector. Then religion helped. Religion helped because, I mean, you can look at that photograph taken fairly recently. There's the Dead Sea in the background there and mountains rising up, but you can see it's essentially a desert area except for Jericho, which was an oasis. It was called the City of Palms, was one of the names that it had been given. And what happened is when people were making a journey to Jerusalem, and particularly pious Jews would never come the short way because that would mean going through Samaria, and pious Jews hated Samaritans, so they went the long way around, down that outer red road that I showed you. They would journey down there, cross the River Jordan, and Jericho would be the last place that pilgrims would stop at before starting the long, difficult climb up to Jerusalem for the festival. So every festival time, and there were lots of them in the Old Testament religion, every festival time, Jericho would become absolutely packed with pilgrims. And what did being packed with pilgrims mean? It meant people needed food, they needed restaurants, they needed accommodation. And what did all that make? All that made money, and all the money meant taxes. Hey, Jericho was a great place to be. This guy had landed on his feet tremendously when he'd been able to buy the right to become chief tax collector. He was doing pretty well for himself. And then there was this annoying day that arrived when Jesus passes through Jericho as he'd done many times before. And Zacchaeus decides he'd like to see Jesus. Now, why? Now, at this point, I'd love to be able to say to you, it was because money had not solved the deepest needs of his life. And he had realized that despite all his money, there was a great hole at the center that Jesus needed to fill. But I can't, because the story doesn't say that. In fact, it starts in an extremely ordinary way. Because what we've got in this story is a journey, a sort of slow progression to finding out a bit more about Jesus. And we'll hear a story about that in a moment. And the first thing is that, actually the first step was quite simply, Zacchaeus just wanted to see Jesus. Verse 3 says he wanted to see who Jesus was. The Greek there could be translated, he wanted to try to get a look at Jesus. So, you know, it's only a bit like, oh, I don't know, someone famous, a pop star or someone like that, coming through your town, your favourite pop star, your favourite film star. You hear he's passing the end of your road and you go out. Why? Because you just like to see him. So you've seen this person in real flesh. And it seems that for Zacchaeus, his journey started with no more than that. It was just another celebrity passing through that he wanted to see. The trouble is there was a problem, because Zacchaeus was not a Tim Horman. He was a little fella. Not that there's anything wrong with little. He was a little fella. And he's having trouble, the story tells us, just getting to see Jesus. I mean, come on, use your imagination at this point. All the taxes that this guy had robbed, do you think he had many friends on Facebook? So here's all the crowd, all lined up in front of him, and here's this little Zacchaeus sort of doing this sort of thing. And, excuse me, could I come through to the front? I'm only small. And you can imagine the sort of answers you got. Oh, sorry. And suddenly he hears the crowd starting to shout, and it's clear that Jesus is getting closer, and this is about to be the biggest thing since Queen Cleopatra visited Jericho 70 years earlier. Nothing had happened since then. And here's Jesus passing through, and he's concerned that he's just going to miss this moment and see this celebrity, when suddenly he looks and sees a sycamore fig tree. There's one. You can see why the little guy could climb it. Sycamore figs have really low-growing branches. So he climbs into this tree just so he can get a look. He's just interested, that's all. But his life was about to change, because Jesus was about to break into what had been a very comfortable life up to this point. Verse 5, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. Now, how did he know the guy's name? I don't know. Was it a word of knowledge? Sometimes the Holy Spirit, as some of you have experienced, gives you facts or information that you don't know. Was it Jesus using a word of knowledge? May have been. I suspect it simply was that Zacchaeus was pretty well known. And Jesus had passed through this place many times before. So Jesus gets to this fig tree. I like to use a bit of holy imagination when I'm reading the Bible. And I can imagine Jesus coming along, getting to the fig tree, stopping. Zacchaeus, what are you doing up there? Come on down. I'm coming to your place to eat tonight. Clearly, he was not Canadian. And I don't know what the guy felt. Maybe he just responded out of sheer shock. And he just did it automatically before thinking what had happened. Maybe it was something to do with the fact that nobody else had ever asked him into their home. Opening our homes is very important, you know, irrespective of what culture we come from. Because when we open our homes, we're opening our hearts to people. And Jesus self-invites and says, do you know what? I'm coming to your place tonight. Nobody else would have done that. Nobody else cared about this guy who was frankly a rogue and a cheat and, to use a technical term, a scumbag. But you know what happens? Something starts a process going on in Zacchaeus' life. And it's really important that we understand that becoming a Christian, it isn't always like St. Paul on the Damascus Road. Blinding light, suddenly we see it. For many people, probably for most people, there's something of a process, as we'll hear in a moment. So his first step is simply that he wanted to see Jesus. But the process moves on a bit. He actually now wants to meet Jesus. Verse 6, so he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Something had started to shift. Maybe, yeah, it was just simply that he'd been accepted for a change rather than rejected. Maybe it was there was something deeper going on in his heart. Maybe there was something being touched deeper inside him. Now, whatever the reason was, not everybody approved. Verse 7 said that all the people saw this and began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. It's funny, actually, in the Gospels, it's normally the religious folk who accuse Jesus of things like that. Because he went into the home of people who didn't keep all their religious rules. Here it's just the ordinary folk, really annoyed that God's love reaches out to people like tax collectors and it shouldn't be allowed. That's what God's love's like. It goes where it really shouldn't be allowed. He wanted to see Jesus. He wanted to meet Jesus. He didn't have to respond to that, I'm coming to your house, but he did. That surely shows there was something going on here, a process happening. He wanted to know more about this guy. He wanted to meet with him and to talk with him. Third step I've summed up as he wanted to follow Jesus and to change. Now, Luke doesn't tell us the details of what happened, but I think it's pretty certain, if we just go back to that one for a moment, typical Middle Eastern meal, all sitting on the floor around a huge spread on the table. There were no microwave meals in those days. You know, saying, come to my place for supper, you wouldn't be eating 30 minutes later. It would take a good couple of hours. Maybe longer if you had to go out and kill a lamb or something first and butcher it. This was a long process. And part of being invited to a meal in Bible times is coming and not just eating, but coming and sharing life together and talking together while the food's being prepared and then while the food is being eaten. And clearly, some sort of conversations went on, though we're not told what they were. And it seems like the more they talked, the more this guy got captivated by what Jesus was saying and about God's love through him. Until eventually, it's a shame we only get the end of the story, not the middle bit, but that's how it is. Verse 8, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount. Wow. How many of us know that there's an indicator that a real change was happening in this guy's heart? He's digging deep into his pocket. And can you imagine, by the way, the news that would have spread through town? I'm sure as Jesus went to Zacchaeus' house, there would have been the nosy parkers following, looking through the door and the windows so they could sneer and comment on it later. Huh, have you seen it? Look, he's gone to Zacchaeus' house. Do you know what? What was that we just heard? He's going to give back all the money that he's robbed. Chris, he's giving all the money back that he's robbed. Come and get it. Daniel, he's getting all the money. We could go. Ross, can you tell people? Go and spread the news. It wouldn't be long before there'd be a pretty big queue. This guy had been a rogue. This was going to cost him. This was going to cost him big time. And he says, not only will I give the money back, I'll give it back fourfold. Actually, the Jewish law, the maximum it could require in the most severe cases was a fivefold repayment. This shows you how serious this guy was starting to understand what a cheat and a scumbag he'd been. Now, how long the meal lasted and what they talked about, we have no idea. But there was a process, a journey, and bit by bit, Zacchaeus starts to see something about Jesus and something about himself that causes him to want to change and for that change to be seen in the way that he lives. And how do we know the change has happened? How can we be sure? Because Jesus says so, verse 9. Today, salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. The change had happened by the end of this process, and Jesus is thrilled by it. Why? Because the Son of Man came to seek and to save that which was lost. That's what he came for. Looking for lost things, messed up things. But finding that Jesus, like with Zacchaeus, sometimes isn't always instant, like Paul with his Damascus Road conversion. Sometimes it's a process. Now, this seems to have been a process of hours rather than days. But sometimes it might be days, sometimes it might even be years. So we've got a story of someone from today who went through a process Zacchaeus-like of looking, watching, seeing. And he's going to come and tell you that story for himself. And that's Ross Kelly, who's one of the students at Regent. And Ross is going to come and share that with us. And then I'll come back in a moment. We'll just get you a mic, Ross.
Thank you. I just want to start by thanking Mike.
A story of a journey. Zacchaeus' journey took a little bit shorter in time than Ross's did, perhaps in a slightly nicer location than Ross's was in. But it was a journey, nonetheless, to discovering more and more about this Jesus. So this is how I want to end this morning. I want to end by reminding you of probably what's the key call in the whole of that story of Zacchaeus. And it's simply this. Zacchaeus, come down. So here's how I want to apply that this morning. Maybe there are some of you here this morning who don't know Jesus yet as your friend in the way that Ross was describing that he went on that journey to become. You're obviously at least at the first stage of wanting to see Jesus, or you wouldn't be here this morning. But what I want to say to you is this. Is there someone here this morning for whom it's time to hear that call of Jesus? Zacchaeus, except put your name in, Ross, or whoever, come down. And I wonder if this morning is a morning for you when you've been looking and watching Jesus from a distance, and you think, do you know, I think I've heard enough to say I need to make a start following this guy. Ross didn't have all his questions answered. That day he gave in. But he started a walk and in a relationship through life. And I wonder if there are some here this morning who are at that stage. If so, Chris and I would love it if you would come and talk to us, or to Ross here as well. And we'd love to pray with you to help you to get to know Jesus as your own friend. Maybe that some of you have been coming along to service for a few weeks and you think, do you know, I'm starting to get this Jesus thing, but I've still got lots of questions. I'd love some sort of course, a class that would help me understand a bit more about who Jesus is and what his message is. We can put that on for you. Come and talk to Chris or I. Give us your name and contact details. We would love to do that. But I also want to end this morning by addressing those of you who are followers of Jesus. Because I felt also this morning, God wanted to put out this challenge of Zacchaeus, however your name is, come down, because I felt God say there were some of us stuck in trees. And we're stuck up in trees of a relationship mess, or a financial mess, or some mess that's happened, and we found ourselves stuck up in a tree, and a bit like a cat that takes fright and leaps up the tree, you don't even know how you got up there. And you certainly don't know how to get down. But even that image this morning is speaking to you, I'm stuck up a tree. Yeah, you love Jesus, you're following him, but you're stuck up a tree. And you need Jesus to call you down and to help you get down this morning. We'd love to pray for you. Maybe you're stuck up a tree of ill health this morning. And you think, I'm fed up of being up this tree of ill health. I need a breakthrough. So this morning, whether you are been looking at Jesus, you've been on a journey thinking, is this for me? The call to you this morning is, Zacchaeus, come down. Come on. Come down, maybe for someone to make a decision this morning, maybe for others to say, I want to start a journey, can you help me? For those of us who are following him, maybe we're just stuck up some particular tree at the moment. Maybe some of us this morning have followed Jesus and somehow drifted. You know, that happens sometimes. And I want you to know, if you drift out, you can't just drift back in. You've got to make a decision. The drift of life will always take you away, because the pull of life is always away from Jesus and the kingdom of God. You don't just drift back in. You have to make a decision of saying, today I decide and I'm going to make some changes. So we're going to end our service like we have been doing the last few weeks. We're simply going to pray. And we're going to ask the Holy Spirit to come and to meet with us. And let's do that together now. Let's pray.